Morning, everybody. This is News Radio 94.9 890 KDXU. It's Wednesday and time for Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
Welcome again to Southern Utah's only elder care radio broadcast, brought to you by Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. We give more. We're trying to do a lot more in the community to raise awareness. And so for all of our new listeners, I'd like to explain why we're here.
Well, we educate the community, don't we? We're trying to help seniors understand what programs are available, what resources are available, and when you should attempt to capitalize on the programs and resources that are available to you. There's a lot of question in the community, and we find that it's hard for seniors to know how to navigate the system. They aren't all necessarily internet savvy, right. And when they have problems, sometimes they just live day by day trying to, you know, muddle through what they're dealing with without any ability to find help. So we're here to help you find the help you deserve.
Right, and we're flipping the switch on healthcare for our senior community. You know, there are a lot of things that change for us as we age, and so we really want everybody that listens to radio broadcast, everybody in the community, to be your own best medical advocate. Healthcare concerns are different at different ages, and if we don't adapt our understanding to our condition, then we probably aren't going to be following the best possible care. So since things change, we need to be better informed, and that's really what we're trying to do with this radio broadcast, is bring information to help us improve our lives, to be more involved in our healthcare with our doctors.
Which is being your best medical advocate. That's right. And some people don't really understand what that means. So how can you be your best medical advocate? Sorry to say it, but you really must be more involved with your medical conditions. You must ask questions of your doctors. Doctors, we've talked about it in the past, they have between 1,700 and 2,000 patients, so they might remember small tidbits about you. They might remember that your son went on a mission, that you have a child in college. They might remember details about your past that lead you to believe they remember you personally. But when it comes to small things about your medical condition, they may have forgotten that you had your gallbladder out 10 years ago.
Yeah, they may only have one patient that has somebody on a mission in Argentina, but they may have 300 patients that have had gallbladder surgery, and so those things may not trigger as well. And again, that's the important thing to remember. Your doctor's doing all that he can with what he has, but he's providing care for quite a few people. So if you can help him, if you can be involved in that medical care, if you can know what your medical conditions are, if you can have all that information, then when the conversation comes and you're talking to him, you may be able to bring up those specific things or things that haven't actually been discussed before that you've come across.
I can't tell you how many times we have people call us that go through their scenario. You know, my mom's showing these signs. My mom isn't able to, you know, get up and walk anymore. And we get their medical records. We always ask for their narratives and plan of care. And as you sit down with these people, you discover that they really don't realize the condition that their family members are in. And they will say things to us like, well, why didn't the doctor tell us this? And we're just giving you your medical records, and you discover them and say, yeah, why didn't the doctor tell us this? He tells you everything. He thinks you're understanding it. He thinks you can look at your loved one and see the decline or see the issues that are at hand. So I really think it's just we're not having a meeting of the minds when it comes to patient and doctor care. The doctor also is in a precarious position of how much information do you really want to know? Are you ready to hear, you know, the hard truth that maybe there really is nothing curative remaining? Anything we do from this point is going to be managing symptoms. That's a hard conversation to have.
So the doctor may have had that with you. He may have done it in a way that wasn't quite as clear.
But or you didn't want to hear it?
Yeah, because from our experience, it's hard to have very clear conversations when both parties aren't moving towards clarity. And we get that talking about end-of-life issues is hard, and we want to avoid it. And sometimes we don't even realize how hard we're trying to avoid it. So we really need to open our own minds to this fact. It is a fact that end-of-life is going to happen. And the best thing that we can do is be able to manage our life as best we can in the time that we have, no matter what that is, whether it's 80 more years or 8 more years or 8 days. You know, we really need to always be open to that information. Now, when we're talking to our doctor will give us some information that we may or may not understand. But I think we can all agree that when things are written down, they're easier for us to retain, they're easier for us to review, and really easier for us to fully understand. Your doctor does write all the important information down, the test results that you have, his plan for you, what they call a plan of care, that's going to be written down, his own opinions, his narrative about things that have gone on. And you have a right to that written information. And we've covered that in the past, and we'll cover it in the future. But ask your doctor for your plan of care, your narrative, your records.
Let me define narrative a little bit broader. The narrative really is a picture. If it's as it's described by Medicare, they expect the doctor to present a picture in their narrative of who they're looking at. So in essence, it could be, and this is kind of an example, this 80-year-old woman comes in presenting extreme pain in her abdomen. Again, trying to create a picture for somebody at Medicare to visualize who the doctor's talking about. And they'll be quite descriptive. And that's when they start to move into medical conditions of the past history. And then they move into the current problems. And they're opinions of what they're going to be able to do for you with these treatments. Is it curative or non-curative? Narratives are very informative. You should always ask for your narrative. And if you just ask for your medical records, you're probably not going to get narratives. But you really want that doctor's picture of you because it's a very clear bird's eye view of what their expectations are for your current condition.
Yeah, that's his bullet point list of the things that are important about your health care, so that when he's reviewing your records, that's what he's going to read first. He doesn't need to read all of the test results, because in the narrative, it's going to reference the important parts of that test for him. And so it's his crib notes. It's his worksheet.
It's probably the one thing he's going to review right before he walks into the room with you.
So it's good for you to have that. So our goal for this program is every week we want to bring relevant and topical information, offer action plans for you, and empower everyone to take control of what they can control in their lives and to find the best path forward for your best possible life.
Before we go on, Andy, I am curious. Any input on being a medical advocate? Have you had any experience with that? Have you had... has anything become, you know, enlightening to you that, oh, maybe I should ask for those things? Any input?
I think that, well, I came in loud there. Sorry about that. Now, I think that you guys have really kind of opened my eyes to some things. I didn't know that doctors kept a narrative. That was new to me. Your POC, the plan of care. You go to a doctor and I'm kind of, I call myself old school because I go in and, you know, the old school way is you go into the doctor and he checks you up and you don't think another thing about it unless he calls you back and says something is wrong. And so to be proactive when you go to the doctor is a new experience. I can report I had a doctor's appointment about a week and a half ago, and I went in with a list of questions and concerns and things that I wanted to ask him about. So instead of just going there and having him, turn your head and cough or stick your tongue out or whatever it was, hey, can you answer this, 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 and this? And it's all because of you guys.
Oh, good.
Well, and I'm glad you did that you took that list, because mm-hmm. doctors have complained that sometimes patients show up and the whole conversation goes on, and then there's the doorknob question. And that's where they're walking,
their
hand on the doorknob to leave, and they say, well, what about this?
The old Columbo question, right? Oh, by the way, ma'am.
That's right. But for the doctor, once he's gone through his deal, that appointment's over. And when you ask that doorknob question, all he can do is say, well, let's set another appointment.
Yeah.
So if you can bring that to the forefront, if you can start with your questions, if you can engage early on, then you'll be better informed. We won't be wasting the doctor's time by setting up more appointments that are unnecessary. We'll be able to get further down the path towards our own understanding.
Something that's important to bring up here is if we touch on anything in this broadcast and you think, oh, I have more questions about that, or I don't know what questions to ask, please feel free to call our office, 435-477-6999. We'd love to explore some of the questions that are relevant to your current situation with you, you know, to help you come up with a list of questions for your medical professional. That's really important. One of the things I want to touch on that's really important to ask when you go into your doctor, have your entire med list available, including all vitamins and supplements and minerals that you're taking. Make sure you ask about your med list and make sure that it's current and relevant. What should I stop taking? What should I add to this supplement list? Those things are really important. We've touched on this before. You might have a primary care physician. You also might have two or three specialists, each of them dealing with separate problems, each of them trying to manage according to the information you gave them when you walked in their door. So one specialist may not realize that the other doctor has already given you a pain medicine, and you end up with, you know, five medicines that are very similar, or taking multiple medications that might contradict each other and or counteract. And so maybe you should take them one in the morning, one in the afternoon. All those things are very, very important. Keep your primary care physician very informed. Have your entire med list available to him so that each time you go in, he can review it and see if it's current, relevant.
So those are our goals for this radio program. And along the way, we want to destroy some myths. We want to, you know, change the understanding of what hospice can be in the community, not just in the community, but among doctors also. We're flipping that script, trying to make those changes. We want to bring a broader range of palliative services, our definition of palliative care, so that hospice can be what it should be for those that
take it. Okay, what's our definition of palliative care versus the general definition of palliative care?
So palliative care is anything that might make us feel better. It probably isn't going to cure us. Us, it's we want to provide everything that can help us improve our lives, whether it goes directly to cure or not. So it's a big difference, and we bring a much broader range.
Remember, palliative should be, and it hasn't been in Southern Utah in the past, but it should be very, very dynamic and specific to each individual's needs. It can be something as specific and dynamic as helping you, your spouse create an ability to plan his own meals for after you're gone. That was one experience that we personally had. And it could be as general as a really good massage therapy. And not just a massage, but a massage therapy where the massage therapist really gets to know you and know what you like and what you don't like and what feels good and what doesn't and when she should adapt and change to your evolving needs. It can be, you know, the woman that just really prides herself in having her hair done and a manicure and a pedicure. Now we come in and do that in your home because it's difficult to get out and take care of yourself, but you still want to feel good about yourself.
Those are going to be important things. So that's our goals and our reason for being here on the radio. And over the past few weeks, we've always started with some COVID good news. So let me cover that. Probably the biggest COVID good news recently is that the news can't find anything new to cause fear, and therefore they're not reporting much about COVID anymore. It's relegated to the healthcare page. So that means that now politics and forest fires are in the forefront of the news, if that's good. Okay. But what
the only thing good about it is that it means that they are focusing attention on other topics. There was a while ago, I mean, Hurricane Lorraine got no attention whatsoever.
Right. But now we're back to other things other than COVID leading the news for us, and that's good. And what I think we're finding is that as people are able to sift through all of the hyperbole that's been out there and come down to just the relevant facts, that while COVID is not a good thing, it's not as bad as we've been led to believe, and that it will be manageable from here on out. So more in that area. So in every state, new infections rates are down. Deaths per capita are down. Those are steep drop-offs, even in New York and California. We still don't recommend going around kissing a bunch of strange New York people.
Or Californians.
But the spread is decreasing. So our recovery rate is increasing. In talking to doctors, our ability to care for the virus is significantly better. So here in Southwest Utah, we have little to fear if we follow the guidelines. And that's the COVID good news.
Let's go back to every single time you hear a death rate, remind yourself to take away the fear factor and look for the recovery rate. We have a really high recovery rate in Utah. The death rate by a percentage is nominal. And while even one death is one death too many, we need to stop living in fear. Fear is, it's a killer. It physically debilitates us. It will cause medical problems. So stop focusing on fear and start focusing on the positive things.
Right. Utah's average is 0.3% death rate, which is a 99.7% recovery rate. And of those that have passed away, almost none of them have done it solely from a COVID infection.
Oh, they all have comorbidities. It's not really stressed in the news, but no healthy young person or even healthy elderly person has died of coronavirus. They've all had a complicating comorbidity.
And by the way, I got a number for you guys. It's 7. 7 was the number of new cases in Southwest Utah in the last 24 hours. How cool is that?
Yeah, that's low.
That's like, I mean, that's the lowest it's been since like March.
Well, so. And remember, new cases don't mean people dying. It
right.
means just tested positive. They may be completely asymptomatic. And if they have symptoms, a large percentage, 99.7% of them, will recover. So of those 7, only if there's one with a deep comorbidity, they may have a complicating, outcome.
And Andy, your numbers are quite interesting, and that's in, you know, considering the fact that we've put people in schools now. You know, we've got mm-hmm. a lot of kids that are associating together that haven't for months and months and months, and we don't see any significant rise. In fact, we see a fall off on infection rates.
And even Dixie State has been going 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
So
everything is looking up. It's a bright sunny day, and I'm going to go back to we need to start celebrating. Go ahead and set up those parties. Do them outside. Invite us. We want to be there. We'll bring dessert.
They can't be parties right. at 100. They should be smaller parties. But
yeah.
we should be okay with keeping the masks on and social distancing. We should be fine socializing again. We should step out and attempt to socialize again. There's good health news in socializing.
Go to that football game.
That's right.
Yeah.
So last week we intended to cover a lot more than we did. We went into better detail on the Alzheimer's and dementia patients and how to help them function better as a caregiver.
How to communicate, how to recognize when your Alzheimer's or dementia loved one may be eligible for hospice and palliative care. And remember, we underuse hospice and palliative care. We truly do. Mm-hmm. A really good hospice and palliative care will come in and eliminate so many of your stresses. When you are struggling with just the day-to-day, how am I going to function and get through this day trying to help my husband or my wife, a good hospice and palliative care program comes in and helps you coordinate all that, helps you take care of your loved one, bathe your loved one, get your loved one fed and dressed each day and groomed. It will relieve a lot of stress. We should look at taking advantage of hospice and palliative care sooner rather than later.
And a lot of us are not sure when that time is appropriate. So we would really like it. If you're not sure whether it's appropriate or not, give us a call. We'll sit down and talk to you. We'll go through what's available, but we'll also talk about the status that's necessary to accomplish it under specific circumstances. We'll look at the medical records for you or your loved one, whoever it is, and work with you to have a better understanding of, you know, the position you're in and whether hospice is appropriate. If it's not, then it's not. But if it is,
then there's no harm in knowing in advance, right? And being prepared and taking the sting of the conversation off. Sometimes it's better to talk about these things well in advance of needing them, because then it's a little less scary when we're trying to make that phone call when time is maybe a little bit closer or some things have popped up. Which brings up, last week I talked to you about how many phone calls we get each week, and we love hearing from our Southern Utah family. But a lot of questions come up, and that's kind of what started the segment over Alzheimer's and cancer patients, right? This week we had two very informative or enlightening calls. One of them was a potential patient, a family member called and said, you know, my mom's always been in excellent, excellent health. She played pickleball last year, 92 years old. The picture of health, strong and vibrant and taking care of herself, living alone. 20 years ago, her husband had passed away, and I'm going to say sadly, they had a scary hospice experience. In fact, the daughter said to me, if she's hospice eligible now, will you tell us before you medicate her and put her to sleep because we want to say our goodbyes? And I was like, we don't do that. That's exactly what we're trying, the myth we're trying to dispel. That should not happen. You should make all of your loved ones' decisions. We bring the resources and the information and the answer all of the questions that you have, but you direct your plan of care. We support you. We allow your loved one to stay in the home with you, and we bring in the services and provisions, the supplies to make that possible for you. So don't be afraid of the word hospice. It's not a scary word if you understand and you control it. Sadly, this woman all of a sudden had, we're going to call it a decline. What is a decline?
A decline is where we no longer are as effective in our lives as we have been in the past, where we may not have the ability to manage all of our ADLs, our activities of daily life, that things are just harder. But those declines can show up in a lot of different ways.
Making sure that we eat healthy meals, just the day-to-day, maybe it's cleaning your house or just getting up and down anymore, changes.
Yeah, just being able to get out of bed may be difficult. Or there's just been a change that we know is not improving our life. And when we are aging, we all have to come to this realization that we may not get better. You know, that this may not just be a phase that is going to be recovered from. And so we should be a little more careful about looking for these declines and events that happen in our lives and
be proactive
in managing that.
Right. So another good call that we had was regarding a lady who her ADLs diminished. Daughter found it, had heard our program, gave us a call, and how wonderful it is that we're able to send people in to help her every day get out of bed and get ready for her day. And with our supplemental help to the daughter, she's able to keep her at home where the doctors had said they thought that she should probably go into an assisted living facility. So remember, the resources that can be available are very dynamic and specific. Please don't be afraid to call our office. There's no obligation, but we can answer those questions and help you resolve your stressful questions and know what programs and facilities are available to you. 435-477-6999.
Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. I think we're pretty much at the end of the radio program. That number, 435-477-6999, we answer that 24/7. I know I'm putting myself at risk of getting calls at 2 o'clock in the morning, but if you have a question, we'll take it. Even if it's after hours, we'll try and answer that question for you.